I'm Tanzina Vega, and this is The Takeaway. The American dream is supposed to include kids, a dog, and a home of one's own. But finding that home is a challenge for many lower-income families across the country. Take Connecticut, where wealthy communities are blocking developers from building affordable housing. Local officials say they're preserving the character of the community, but housing advocates say these tactics reinforce and create racially and economically segregated communities. It's a similar story being played out in communities across the country where wealthier residents are saying, "Not in my backyard," to lower income neighbors. Joining us from Connecticut is Jacqueline Rabe Thomas, a reporter for the Connecticut Mirror, who recently wrote a story about the issue. Welcome to The Takeaway, Jacqueline.
Thanks for having me.
And Malo Hudson is an associate professor at Columbia University's Graduate School of Architecture, Planning, and Preservation. He joins us as well. Malo, thanks for being back with us on The Takeaway.
So glad to be here.
So we have so many questions about this. Malo, let's start with you. What are we talking about when we're talking about affordable housing versus public housing?
Well, that's a very good question. And when we think about affordability, it's really oftentimes looking at area median income. And so looking at who the most vulnerable populations might be when we think about their needs for housing. Public housing is a public type of housing that's managed by the government. And so it's specific requirements to live there. You have to fit within certain requirements that they have, and that's public housing. But oftentimes when we think of affordable housing now, it's really for teachers and civil servants and everyday Americans that pay their taxes because the cost of housing for many people is out of reach.
Now, Malo, just really quickly, do we have a sense of what the supply and demand of affordable housing looks like across the country? Are there more people who need it than actual stock?
Well, the United States is a very diverse place in terms of housing need. But when you think about the coast or places that have strong economies, so your Chicago's of the world, the San Francisco's, the New York's, the Washington, D.C.'s, there's great demand for housing and very little supply to meet that demand.
Jacqueline, you've written about families in Connecticut specifically. Let's talk about who you decided to focus on. Tell me about what these families were experiencing.
So one experience that really stood out to me was that of Ashana Cunningham and her family. You know, she was working her 40-hour job at a daycare, making $14 an hour, and then her wife got sick, and she wasn't able to have a two-income housing. And then all of a sudden, she got into a car accident, and she lost her car, and she didn't have transportation to get to her daycare job, and so she had to stop working for, you know, a month and a half. And by the time she was able to sort of get back on her feet and find another job and, you know, get over some of the obstacles she was facing, she was in a homeless shelter. And she's still struggling to get back on her feet. And she's working full time. She actually has two jobs. She, you know, is making now $12.50 an hour at a daycare, and she's working a second job at Family Dollar for $11 an hour. And for her, the reality is just, you know, just trying to make it paycheck to paycheck. So finding something like buying a home, it's just so far out of her reality.
There are other bigger issues that you also focused on in your piece about Connecticut specifically, and it has to do with zoning. Can we talk a little bit about that?
Sure. So Connecticut state law leaves zoning issues to local zoning boards. And so what that means is that local zoning boards get to determine what type of housing opens in their neighborhood. And just to sort of put that in perspective, 3/4 of Connecticut's communities, 123 municipalities, require a special permit, meaning their local zoning board has to approve anything that has multi-units. So anything that has 2 or 3 or 4 units, you know, apartment buildings that are inherently, you know, more affordable for individuals need to go through their zoning boards. And what I found through listening to hours of zoning board meetings are things like, you know, we're concerned that there's no sidewalks on the street to lead to the train station, or it's going to take over the limited open space that we have, or it's going to impact our neighborhood character, or it's going to cause overcrowding. And then, but then when you dive in a little bit deeper, you hear things like the developer saying, okay, let's come up with a plan to develop sidewalks, and being shut down. let's come up with a plan to make this street safer. Let's widen it a little bit and this shut down. So what I found is in the municipalities that I really dove into is that you didn't really find a willing partner to sort of bring these projects to fruition.
We're also going to talk a little bit about what's behind that lack of willingness in a minute. But Malo, I want to bring you back in here because we're talking about Connecticut specifically with Jacqueline, but zoning laws are, you know, across the country. What are the effects, Malo, of this practice of local zoning laws essentially being used to keep affordable housing out? What are the impacts of that?
There are major implications for this, negative implications, especially for lower income, vulnerable populations or communities of color that are looking for quality housing, that are looking for good schools, that want to be in areas that are great for their families. And when you don't have affordable housing being built, multifamily housing, we basically are allowing communities to be largely homogenous, whether that be along racial and ethnic lines, economic lines. So you have economic segregation, racial segregation, and that presents a huge problem. And if we're to think also about the environmental issues, right? So if you look at places like Connecticut and even in California, where you have zoning ordinances that require an acre to build a home on, right? And so you think about the type of land just to build on, and you have developers saying, we're willing to build dense, we're willing to build different types of housing that would incorporate multiple types of people near transit lines, near public transit, so people can get to work and so forth.
So in Connecticut, I found, speaking to that issue about large acreage, in one southwest town, to build a multi-unit, you need 70 acres in Monroe, wow. Connecticut. In Avon, you need 15. You know, these are things that while on the books, it's, well, you're able to build multi-unit, but what's the practicality of anyone ever actually being able to come to the finish line on building a multi-unit? And you know, that what that's led to is Connecticut has some of the most segregated regions in the country. You know, you talk about where low-income housing is located in Connecticut, and in Bridgeport, one out of every five houses or housing units in Bridgeport is dedicated for low-income residents. In Hartford, it's one in four. You know, go to Westport, it's one in 30. So, you know, these things have real implications. You know, there's different things that happen because of that. Brookings Institution, they found that in order to cross that barrier, to make that move to a higher performing school or to a higher cost area, it costs 3.5 times more. So Ashana Cunningham, the woman I spoke about earlier and her family, it would cost their family $25,000 more to move to a Westport or to a, you know, a higher income area with that that has better schools.
And I just want to stress the point that Jacqueline just made, the excellent point of when you see how exclusionary zoning is being used, it contributes to racial and economic segregation, but also can decrease the housing supply, which in turn then leads to higher housing cost, right? So therefore, it's benefiting those who already can afford to own the home, live in these communities. But for people who want to start their lives, start their careers, have young children, it's very difficult to break into these types of communities. And you have to think about the motivations here. And much of it is around protecting housing values, property values, also maintaining the kind of community context that people want, which is code for we like living near similar types of people as ourselves, whether that be affluent, upper middle class, certain racial and ethnic backgrounds. And that's the whole problem with this and the big challenge that we need to fight.
And one of the things that's interesting about this is in your reporting, Jacqueline, there's also a political element to this. And what's interesting is that the Connecticut is one of the, you know, more liberal states in the United States. It's definitely a Democrat run state in many ways. Jacqueline, what does this tell us about these supposedly liberal communities like Westport, where their politics don't seem to line up at the local level as they do, at least on the federal level?
So local authority is part of our tradition here in Connecticut. And overcoming that and asking legislators to sort of say, okay, we're going to take away some of that local authority, you know, how do you think they're going to get reelected? So there's that's going on. There's that dynamic. In Connecticut, you know, Democrats have run the General Assembly for the last 22 years, the governor's mansion for the last 8. And, you know, in a bipartisan fashion in 2017, they scaled back the laws that helped make it a little bit easier for developers to bypass local zoning rules.
Malo, what are the protections, if any, for low-income Americans who are looking for housing? Are there laws in place that are meant to mitigate this? Are there class action lawsuits that tenants or potential tenants can get together and really do? I mean, it just, and the reason why I ask is because I feel like what happens is these communities then become created, low-income communities become created, and even those communities then risk being gentrified. So it feels like low-income Americans are constantly being pushed around. What does the law say?
Well, we have laws in the books. So even going back to, 1917, where Los Angeles is one of the first cities, actually, to do citywide exclusionary zoning based on race and ethnicity. And we've said that that's illegal. You can't do that. And then we also have the Fair Housing Act of 1968. But the fact of the matter is what we're talking about is implementing the law, right? And so you can have all the laws in the books, but if we're not implementing it and really understanding how it plays out on the ground, it becomes very difficult. And so Jacqueline spoke wonderfully about local control and local authorities and how that can be abused, right? So you can say, well, I live in this community. I want to maintain the character of the community. I want to make sure that the right people live here, and or we're concerned about traffic. These making sure it's not ghettoized. These could be code words, right? And so, how do you then say this is blatant discrimination? Which, in this case, we know it is. You can go on and look at different examples across the country where there's been no affordable housing being built for decades, right? So there's major challenges there. So I think what we have to think about is how do you build the public will? How do you mobilize people to really speak out on these issues? How do you get state legislators and electeds to have basically the strength to stand up and speak out about what is right and to really reframe the discussion and to say, when we're talking about affordable housing, we're talking about for the majority of Americans, right? Look at the housing cost. This is not just a Connecticut issue. It's a New York issue. It's a California issue. I mean, go across the country, right? And so what we have to do is have a broader conversation of talking about housing as a human right. And not a goal, but it's a right for people. And what impacts that has when families can't live in communities, diverse communities, in terms of having affluent people, middle-income people, working-class people. And that, to me, is what we always like to talk about, the American dream. In fact, in reality, it's not happening.
Malo Hudson is an associate professor at Columbia University's Graduate School of Architecture, Planning, and Preservation. And Jacqueline Rabe Thomas is a reporter for the Connecticut Mirror. Jacqueline, Malo, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.